Incidentally, regarding the position of the United States in this crisis of Great Britain versus Argentina, on the NBC News this week on Thursday night, there was a request of the British for the European allies to have an embargo of trade against Argentina, which they agreed to do. But the United States said they couldn't do that embargo because on that day or the next day, which would have been this past Friday, they were shipping $40 million dollars worth of chemicals down to Argentina. Now, that is an outrageous amount of chemicals, enough to kill everyone in this world if you wanted to analyze what the potentials are in the chemicals that we're shipping down to Argentina. If you read the news this week, the entire state of Michigan is contaminated with some chemicals in the feed of cattle. That PCB, we don't know the consequences for years. And all you have to do is ship that kind of poison into the 49 other states and have a whole generation that is weakened or possibly has cancer later on in their food and in their produce and in their animals, if they eat animals, that kind of pollution. So $40 million of chemicals went down to Argentina by the United States government the very time that the other allies were having an embargo. This is supposed to be the Operation Zero Week, where we talk about atomic bombs and the danger of nuclear explosions and doomsday. And the nuclear people have never liked me particularly. They don't like the broad range of subjects I go into. They want to stop atomic bombs or the testing of bombs. And I don't believe in a single problem, a solution to what's going on in the world. You can stop testing atomic bombs. You can stop making them. We have enough to blow the world up now. But what are you going to do with the chemicals, $40 million chemicals, to a country that tells Mr. Timmerman, this time we're going to win World War III and we're sending them chemicals? Think about that one. Those are the things that we should be stopping, because they're even as dangerous and insidious. They're not quite as visible as having your flesh fall off. But we're sending them down to Argentina at this time. Well, Alexander Haig is seen on the evening news playing his tennis this Sunday. He couldn't miss his tennis game. He should get his ass home. Now, an outrageous traitor is down there having a ball with people that have sworn that they'll win World War III this time. Torturers, murderers, and hardly one being impartial. It's hanging down there for the few extra days, which he didn't have to do. Now, getting back to the Falkland Islands and a little bit of history, for those of you who have the book The Crime and Punishment of I.G. Farben, the large chemical compound that has been written up as being the network for, again, the supremacy, the end of World War III, finalizing World War II, and controlling us through corporations and chemicals. During World War I, the chemical compound in Germany needed gunpowder. They needed salt. They had to go to Chile for saltpeter. They had to get synthetic ammonia in order to make gunpowder, and they had to scale the world and find out where to go it. They had to convert the ammonia into nitric acid. This is the book on I.G. Farben. The munitions industry needed nitric acid, and they looked around for various areas where they could get it from, particularly from Chile. And then there was a shortage in nitric acid during World War I. And all of a sudden, the German Admiralty, according to this book, devised a bold and imaginative plan worthy of the stakes involved. The goal was to capture the British-owned Falkland Islands. This was during World War I, an unfortified coaling and supply base for British naval vessels at the tip of South America. These islands were the southernmost hinge of the British blockade, standing guard over trade routes from the west coast of South America to Europe. Their mission was to capture the Falkland Islands, and they embarked on what they called the Battle of Nitrogen by going down to Chile and South America and getting the nitrogen they needed for their gunpowder. The British Admiralty learned of the presence of these ships off of Chile and the German commander, and they sent down ships and stopped this grabbing of the Falkland Islands at the time. They were able to put the Germans off of grabbing the Falklands, which was important, the harbor there, and for shipping and so forth. And it goes into the fact that Winston Churchill, in his book, After the War, The World Crisis, doesn't mention the Falkland Islands, and they said he apparently didn't know its importance. But Winston Churchill was very much a part of an area that I'll go into at a later time, when the war was over, when he said we fought the wrong person, when he helped the Nazis, he realized he should have fought the Soviet Union. And I don't believe that Winston Churchill knew that the Falklands wasn't important. I think he left it out of his book, because at the end of World War II, the Falklands and Antarctica were already built up and were getting built up, particularly the Antarctica area. So that the Germans had to turn back, and the German dye stuff industry had to go other places. They were looking for bromine, chlorine, and so forth down in that area. But Falkland was important there for the war materials in World War I, so you know that it's important right now, and it's been an area that we haven't been taught about in our schools in geography, but other people have watched it very carefully. Now, a year ago in 1981, last June, I was doing a series of broadcasts on the links of our government to the fascist regime in Antarctica, from Italy, not to Antarctica, Argentina. And I did several programs on the P2 scandal, the Italian politics, the links of our State Department, Ronald Reagan, Alexander Haig, to Argentine, to the Nazis down there. And I cited the February 1981 attempt to kill the King and Queen of Spain, and to put the links of Nazis to Argentine, those connections I had on that particular broadcast, June 7th, 1981. And then I had a reminder of February 1981 of the role of Ronald Reagan and Alexander Haig in the plans to put the Nazi fascists back on the throne of Spain. And that is their direct link of financing and building up Argentine after World War II. The P2 scandal, the Italian scandal where the government changed hands in May of 1981, made Licio Gelli flee to Argentine. And he's very important to Argentine. He took about $22 billion out of Italy and went down to Argentine. And June the 14th, 1981, I did a broadcast, The Courtship of Argentine. It was from the New York Times, why Ronald Reagan, William Buckley, James Buckley family are thick with Brazil, Argentine, and want the United States to share our Navy with the Argentine Navy. Now, we knew that Great Britain was having trouble in the Falklands with Argentine, but the Reagan administration was gung-ho to let them use our Navy and our experience down there. And I cited Licio Gelli with his important mafia drug connections, blackmailing the United States, that he was at the inauguration of Ronald Reagan. He was one of the dignitaries and people that donated to the Ronald Reagan administration and the allegiance of Reagan to these people down there in Argentine. There's been a strong tie of the entire administration to that group down there, and there's no way that they can stay disinterested. They've been loyal to that gang from Italy, the fascism, to Spain, to Argentine all along, and I cited the role that Frank Sinatra had in a large contract where they failed to build a multi-million dollar investment in New York City, a Harry Helmsley, and the money comes out of the Marcy Group of Argentine, a billion-dollar investment with a $100 million studio in the west side of New York City, Sinatra being the key man. Sinatra, working with the Argentine junta, was at Ronald Reagan's inauguration and now gets to use the front porch to share the White House. He said last time when he was there with the former president of Italy, was there last week, he didn't want to use the back door that's for dignitaries anymore. Sinatra uses the front door. Licio Gelli, dual citizenship between Argentina and Italy, was at Reagan's inauguration. Richard Allen has close ties to Licio Gelli, along with Alexander Haig and the NATO operations, and Michael Sindona, who also donated to the Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon Republican Party. There's an intense loyalty between this group and the Argentine fascism, and I don't think that England really stands a chance. I think they'll be betrayed if they can. And as I say, the symbol of Jean Kirkpatrick of the UN having dinner at the Argentine embassy with Walter Stessel, the deputy of the State Department under Alexander Haig, the night that they went into Falklands and took over, is symbolic of what the United States is going to do and intends to do visually and in every other way. There was an article this week in the paper, U.S. reportedly giving both sides intelligence. Can you imagine such a thing? The United States is providing intelligence to both Argentine and Britain. There's been passing off of information to both sides. And it goes into the fact that the United States is providing through our satellites to Great Britain what is going on. And at the same time, The officials confirmed the sharing of U.S. intelligence with Argentine, some information gathered by reconnaissance satellites. This is the most treacherous behavior, I think, that makes Mr. Chamberlain look heroic just before World War II broke out, going from to Germany and back to London, trying to appease when the war is about to break out. I think this is the most scandalous behavior, and everything that Ronald Reagan's done from the time he was in office leans right to the Argentine. Junta, which many articles have said he wants the Argentinians to come in and wipe out Central America, all those countries, and put them into a slave fascist state, and Congress won't let him do it. So he's depending upon the Argentine soldiers to wipe out Central America and have a total fascism through South and Central America. And meanwhile, they can deposit back in some form the $40 million worth of chemicals that we shipped out from the United States this week. Betty Beal, the Society column in the Monterey Herald, she's also in the Washington Post, Ladies' Luncheon Feet, Rich Argentine Lady. And this is this just this past week. The day Argentina invaded the Falkland Islands, the richest woman in Argentina, if not all Latin America, was the guest of a small luncheon given by Assistant Secretary of State Tom Ender's wife, Gaetana, G-A-E-T-A-N-A. And you may have seen Mr. Ender's on the television during the time of the El Salvador crisis, which isn't over, and giving his opinion on what was going on down there. I'll have to get out the articles on Ender's to just refresh my memory about how bad he was at the time. Now, Gaetana Ender's is an Italian-born woman, and as I say, the P2 scandal with Licio Gelli, the dual citizenship between Italy and Argentine, is very interesting. And when that story first broke in 1981, the newspaper said that that international operation of fascism, the real hard fascism, Licio Gelli, to put a police state in Spain and Italy simultaneously last year, it was conducted and directed from the United States. Well, the day that the Falklands was invaded, that same evening, Walter Stessel and Jean Kirkpatrick were at the Argentine embassy, the dinner in New York City with the Argentinians, UN people. In Washington, D.C., was the luncheon, and I don't think this happened to be a coincidence. This woman, Amalia, better known as Amalita, Fortabat, F-O-R-T-A-B-A-T, is an industrialist from Buenos Aires. She just bought last year a $6.4 million Turner painting in London for her home in Argentina, $6.4 million that William French Smith, he said he tried to buy for the Huntington Art Gallery. And she's entertained in Washington by Mrs. Anders. She's the biggest cement factory owner in Argentina. Her husband died a few years ago. So Mrs. Anders and her friend from Argentina are having a luncheon with other wives of Washington, D.C. And it's very hard not to see the richest woman of Argentina, who is buying this art from London and elsewhere around the world, wine and dine in Washington the day that the Falklands is invaded. An article this last week in the San Jose Mercury, and I brought in a lot of articles to share, the U.S. may be the biggest loser in the Falkland, by Anthony Lewis. And it brings out the point, on Friday evening, April the 2nd, the Argentine embassy in Washington, it was in Washington, not in New York, arranged a dinner in honor of Jean Kirkpatrick, and Deputy Secretary of State Walter J. Stessel was sitting there with her the day that the Falklands was invaded. He said, from almost the day he took office, Ronald Reagan has fawned on the military tyrants who rule Argentine. And it says, in February 81, a new American delegation to the UN Commission on Human Rights tried to soften the work on the disappearances of people. That's the outright murder of 20, 30, 40,000 people. They prepared a speech saying, we recognize in Argentina one of the world's advanced civilizations, a religious culture. This is a quotation from our great president. In March, General Robert Viola, then Argentine's president designate, came to Washington, D.C. and got a warm welcome. And later, Mrs. Kirkpatrick went to Buenos Aires, where she said the United States was going to improve military relationships with Argentina. In May, Secretary of State Alexander Haig told a congressional committee that he wanted to resume sending millions and millions of military aid to Argentina because that country and our shared values. When asked what values, he said, we resist communism, and we believe in God. And Anthony Lewis said, America will be the loser of the Falklands. He said, the Argentine rulers are cold-blooded opportunists. They harbor among them murderers, plain fascists, people who openly display swastikas, and in cells they torture Jews and other people, and so forth. And he says that these generals are laughing at us. The generals in Argentina are laughing at the United States. They are genuine totalitarians who think the outcome of World War II was a great mistake. And it goes on to the role that they're going to continue now. Some of my older articles on Argentina and the relationship to Antarctica, I have one from the Washington Post, September the 17th, 1979. And it shows where the Glomar Explorer, remember the Glomar? That was the multi-billion dollar ship that you and I paid for out of our taxes for the CIA. Then the Glomar Explorer goes down to Antarctica. This is, as I said, Washington Post, 1979, and realizes that there's $45 billion worth of gallons of oil down in Antarctica. And the Glomar is working for the Texas Geophysical Company of Houston, trying to grab up the minerals, the first step for mineral research down there, okay? Three oil companies are representative of the State Department's Antarctic Advisory Committee: Atlantic Richfield, Exxon, and Gulf. Now, Exxon is Alexander Haig, Henry Kissinger, and Chase Manhattan. If anybody doesn't know, that's the David Rockefeller combine exploiting the oil possibilities down there. And Gulf Oil is Richard Mellon Scaife, who totally runs the cabinet that was selected by Ronald Reagan and has been so influential with Richard Vogrey, with kicking out congressmen that were anything but right of Genghis Khan. Richard Mellon Scaife is the very, very wealthy Gulf Oil character who's buying up newspapers in California, who controls so much of the media, of Georgetown University, of appointments of people like Mr. Watts, Jean Kirkpatrick, the polluters of the world. Now, this article, 1979, tells how the Glomar Explorer, built by us with the CIA under the Howard Hughes cover, goes down to look at 45 million barrels of oil. And they used that ship, and they drilled four holes in the Ross Sea to get an idea of what was going on. So the Glomar, remember the first story of the Glomar was that they dug up a Russian ship and gave a prayer for some dead Russians and then threw them back in the water. That many years ago, I did programs on the Glomar Explorer around 1972, 73. It was nothing but a ship built with our taxes to explore the areas of the world that are for the purposes of a handful of corporations. And like the famous lines in that movie Network that Patachevsky wrote, there are no countries or boundaries, there's just corporations like Exxon and Dow Chemical. That article is from 1979 in the Washington Post. Another article, the San Francisco Chronicle, December the 8th, 1979. Antarctica's wealth. For more than 20 years, the United States has been carrying on these scientific programs. And this article goes into the geophysical exploration of the Glomar Explorer again and the huge hunk of oil, $55 million. The United States is paying a year in Antarctica on these programs. $55 million a year you've been sending down to Antarctica. I told you last week how much money has been flowing down there constantly, but did you realize $55 million a year has been going down in that area? And we're supposed to believe that this little Falkland confrontation and the lineup of this cast of characters, the real bastards of the world, has to do with 1,200 people and sheep on a windy island. December the 8th, 1979, this came from the San Francisco Chronicle, $55 million a year going down to Antarctica. Another story I have, some going back to 1979, 1980, the United States assures a role in the future of Antarctica, and this tells about, at the present time, there were 800 people living down in Antarctica. This is in 1979 that they admitted. 255 Soviets, 154 Argentinians, 114 Americans, and 2,400 summer residents living down in Antarctica. And as I said before, if you look at the maps, there's warm water bases, brown hills, and a lot of things that you may not have even dreamt that were going on. but have been written up in the literature if you want to see it. Another article in the New York Times this past week, it was in July, Argentine and Soviet are no longer just business partners. Now, this has to do with the Soviet Union being angry at us and always talking about their human rights and trying to get into what they do in their jails, and the Soviet Union lining up with Argentina and telling us to butt off about human rights, that they're going to trade wheat, they're going to trade meat, the Soviet Union will send them weapons, that they're both sick and tired of our holier-than-thou attitude. This article is by Edward Schumacher. It said the Soviet market is Argentine's principal outlet for the export of grain and beef, and the Russians are sending hydroelectric and nuclear energy programs. The two countries often ally with each other in international organizations, and they perceive the United States as interfering in their human rights policies, and they don't like it. The growing Soviet-Argentine ties seem startling. Argentina is headed by a junta with bloody suppression of the left, and it goes into the philosophy of not allowing Marxist papers and newspapers or movies, but at an economic level, they're trading and getting along fine. And in 1980, the New York Times had an article, the seventh Soviet base is established in Antarctica. That's March 24th, 1980. Another one in 1979, New York Times, algae are found thriving under the lake ice in Antarctica. And one in May 1980, Los Angeles Times, the scramble is on for the Antarctic reserves. Now, there's a little irony in the Antarctic story that I may wind up with. I have one or two more things I might have time for. The base for this operation, the United States base, for a lot of this is down at the Ascension Islands. The Ascension Island has been a place for the Americans for the space program. It's a base for our satellite tracking station. It's the site of major communications relay installations. There's an article about the Ascensions, April the 10th, last week, 1982, New York Times. Americans live there, several hundred. They operate an Air Force base that was built in 1942, which Britain is using. They're bringing in their C-130s and they're stocking up, and that's the base from which they'll fuel and land and use our base at Ascension Island that has been very important for our security down in that area. Now, just 700 miles below Ascension Island is St. Helena Island, and the funny thing is that the Ascension area was used after Napoleon was taken as a prisoner down to St. Helena Island. Many people don't know that or don't remember it, but Napoleon ravaged the world, tried to conquer Russia, lost, you know the story of Waterloo, lost the battle, couldn't take the riches of Russia, the gold, the resources, the minerals, the huge landmass of the forest. They thought it was for grabs, and Napoleon wanted it. And he was held off, and he was turned back. And because of his defeat, he was stuck on a little island in St. Helena, where he died in 1821, where ever since Napoleon tried to get Russia, the people of Europe have tried hard to conquer that wonderful mass that they just want to get their greedy hands on. Long before there was Karl Marx and the Russian Revolution, it has to do with mineral and oils and forests and access to this huge land mass. It has more to do with that. So here we are, almost with the same people trying to accomplish what Napoleon couldn't do. He lost and was stuck on this little island till he died. And just 700 miles from there is the United States trying again to fight the Soviet Union because Napoleon couldn't take Russia. The United States and the Germans and the British and so forth thought they could take it. And they built up this machinery. They built up the war machine for Adolf Hitler. The Wall Street built him up. The American industrial giants, the British and so forth, built him up so that he would conquer Russia. And then they would all divide the spoils, okay? But it didn't work out that way. Then when the war was over, Churchill said, we fought the wrong people, so they shipped arms and loans. My goodness, the British own like $30 billion Argentine owes Britain. They give them the money, and Argentine gets all the weapons and buys the chemicals and then says, we don't have money to pay the debts. What if the 500 banks that loaned billions of dollars to Poland and got nothing for it gave the money to Poland, and then the Polish sent it down to Argentina to get ready for World War III again? What if all that money just went directly down to the area where we're going to see a lot of dust and fire? And if we don't see it this week or next week, it has to build up, because that is the way the score has been written. It's been written in many history books. It's there for you to see. So the Ascension Islands is where the British will use, if they get to the push and shove. The Americans are down there preserving their base and station, and they're only 700 miles from where Napoleon died, and we're willing to die, and the British are willing to die, and the Argentine are willing to die for the same reasons all over again. You see the newsreel, Margaret Thatcher, they're waving her on, let's go to war. You see the newsreels of Argentine, let's go to war. They're all willing to go again for the same reason, and it just seems so silly. But they want that Russia, and they have to have it. Now, there was an article by Mary McGrory, Reagan's response in Argentine must have scalded Margaret Thatcher. And she brings out the point that Ronald Reagan said in the Oval Office press conference, we are friends of both sides, when asked about the aggression. And he repeated, friends of both sides. And she brings out how Margaret Thatcher and the British were along with us at the hostage crisis, how they defended Reagan from the sniping when he was criticized with the other NATO allies, and they supported his economic policies and his nuclear strategy. And then she says, he comes in and he says, I'm on the side of being neutral. She says he's supporting a fascist tin horn junta that's engaged in flagrant aggression, and how can he be friends of both sides? Argentine's aggression, she writes, is outrageous. And then he goes off to the Barbados to get support for his Caribbean basin and more politics, and the hope to use Argentine for the bloodbath down there. Now, this situation of Alexander Haig lining up with these people, Margaret Thatcher said this week she trusts Haig more than Reagan, but that means you maybe trust Himmler more than Hitler. It's a matter of degree who you trust and who your friends are. One thing has been perfectly obvious ever since Ronald Reagan took oath of office, and I've dated it and put it on the air on these programs week after week, was the alliance of everyone in his administration and with the fascist countries, the attempted coup in Spain, in Italy, in the White House, with Frank Sinatra, the heads of states, the Navy operations down there with Chile and Argentina. We have encouraged them. We are secretly supporting them. We are hiding the real purposes. And our major oil companies have already explored what they want down there. And I noticed that they're not British oil companies down there. You see, they're Exxon, Richfield, and Gulf. I don't even see Queen Juliana's Shell down there, although I'm sure they'd get a piece of the action. I really believe, as some article said last week, that the United States is ready to go it along and write off their allies. And I think this has been the intention for a long, long time, that they don't need Europe. They can even chemically get rid of them. And that, I think, is the biggest danger. I've always said that the chemical war, the spread of chemicals in food, in fertilizer, in the air, in the waterways, rivers, they could wipe us out because they have the means and technology. And if we're shipping them $40 million worth of chemicals last week, who shipped it? What was it? Who gave the permission? Those are the traitors. Those are the people that are selling this country out, and they should be charged as being traitors. There's so many shenanigans going on, as I say, such as appointing a Republican senator to replace a Democratic senator, a member of the Rockefeller Foundation, when Rockefeller chased Manhattan, got Senator Williams out. There's so much collusion and chicanery, but the world picture down there is very important. And if you look back over articles and maps over the last 20 years, it's all there. The script is there, but nobody wanted to see it. It's like Jacques Vallée says when he talks about the UFOs being man-made. He says, this isn't what American people want to see and hear, he was told. They want to have some dream or fantasy about the way the world is. And the way the world is described in book after book of contracts, deals, explorations, maps. It's all there if you want to see it. And now they're coming to the push and shove. So it'll be interesting to see in the next weeks the next act of this stage play. In the meantime, you take care, and we'll do our homework, and I'll be back with you, I hope, next week. It's Mae Brussel, Carmel, California.
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Brussel. This program originates from Carmel, California.
KLRB, Carmel by the Sea.